Welcome back, everyone. True Crime on Easy Street. We are at Easy Street Restaurant Bar Performance Hall, looking at the Christmas dance floor.
Mm-hmm. All those great TVs with bowl games going on every day.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do here at Easy Street.
That's exciting.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It's the holiday season. Scott, my name is Kelly Turner. I'm not a doctor.
My name is Scott Wright. I am a mediocre journalist.
And I'm Katie Givens, and I'm not a lawyer.
And we are here. This is the holiday episode of True Crime on Easy Street.
I am dressed festively. I don't know why the two of you are not.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.
Katie has black fingernails.
They are festive.
Is that festive?
There's one that looks like a present.
Oh, she's showing me a finger. I'm not going to tell anybody which one it is. That's it.
That one's festive too.
There's a gold one for New Year's.
That one was especially festive.
Yes.
Maybe for me in particular.
It is. That one was.
It was that time.
Yeah. So happy holidays to everybody. Thank you to all of our listeners out there. Hope that you're listening to us on your way to your Christmas party or your Christmas family gathering or whatever.
Drive safely. You're going get home to. In one piece.
Mm-hmm, please do. Scott, what are you doing for the holidays?
I'm going to sit on my couch with my two dogs and watch movies. Mm. This is what I do.
What is your favorite Christmas movie?
I didn't say Christmas movies. I said movies. The new Matrix movie drops on HBO Max on Wednesday. I'm going to save that until the weekend, and I'm going to watch it.
I am not finished with the second Matrix. I've got to finish that and then watch the third.
You don't really have to.
You don't to watch this one?
I mean, you can
if
you want.
I'm not going to be behind.
The first Matrix movie was the good one. The other two were just kind of...
Well, I've seen them all, but I don't remember everything that happens.
You won't be overly impressed 10 years later or whatever it
is. So I should just forget that and just watch the
movie. I'm not saying that you shouldn't watch it. I mean, there's some continuity there. You should probably watch all three of them just to...
Okay.
So that the story in this new one makes sense.
Do the dogs like The Matrix? Are they going to watch it?
They don't really... I don't let them play with the remote controls that much. I mean, they don't really have thumbs, so I don't worry about it. They just kind of lay there and bark at random things.
Okay.
So my dog can't watch anything on TV that has a horse in it. Like she
go on.
She's obsessed with horses. Uh-huh. If a horse comes on the TV screen, she has a fit. Like she can't watch Yellowstone. Shane's been watching The Witcher. She can't watch it. She can't watch anything with a horse. I don't know what she would do if she saw a horse in real life. She might explode.
I do that with Naomi Watts. So I don't know what I would do if I saw Naomi Watts in real life. Probably
that is interesting. Like, you're going to have to record this and send it to us.
Please. I will. And put it on our Instagram.
You know, Katie's dog, funny story about Katie's dog, Pepper. Oh. What kind of dog is Pepper?
She's a pug.
A pug. Okay, so she's this adorable little black pug.
Mm, true.
She's solid black.
She's gorgeous. Monday when we record.
We love her so.
We do.
We were at their home, my husband and I, and Pepper threw up on KT.
Yes.
I love Pepper even more than I ever have before in my life. That is, how do I not know this? I want a t-shirt with a picture of that.
You were supposed to be there that night.
Yeah, you were, and you crapped out on us, crapper. Crapper outer. I'm a crapper. So we're sitting there, and Pepper, what's so funny is the way that she did it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was literally so fast, and she literally made this noise. Bah. And that was it. And then all of this vomit. Went all over.
All right. KT. Okay.
It was fantastic.
Please tell me it ruined at least one pair of those trousers that he wears.
No, it did not. We were able to clean it up. Katie was so embarrassed.
Oh, I was.
I could not stop laughing. It was fantastic.
That is funny.
I loved it.
That's funny. Should we mention that your daughter is here in the studio with us today?
Let's not tell anybody. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, she's... Katie Turner is just watching today.
All right.
School's out, and it's...
probably trying to figure out whose chair she wants when she takes over this entire operation.
It's take your daughter to podcast day.
All right.
So here she is. She's so excited to be here. You can tell by the look on her face.
I know, right? She smiled.
She did smile.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's progress.
She's actually laughing right now, so that's funny.
I'm not sure about that. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. Not anymore.
So we thought, because it is the holiday episode of True Crime on Easy Street, that we would share just some little holiday anecdotes before we got started on the case for today. So, Scott, take it away.
Well, I thought it would be a cool idea to tell a story about, for each of us to tell something, because it would be a way for the audience to get to know us a little bit better and maybe for us to get to know each other. I mean, we know each other pretty well, right? But maybe.
I mean, sort of.
Sort of. But so I was going through a photo album a couple of weeks ago, and I found this photograph, and it reminded me of Christmas. It wasn't really something that happened at Christmas, but it's something that always reminded me of Christmas. So when I was a kid, when I was four and my little brother was two and my late maternal grandfather would come over and visit with us, we would always want to ask him to pretend to be Santa Claus so that we could practice what we wanted to ask Santa for Christmas. And so the way that that's what we called my maternal grandfather, Dwight Mackey. The way that he prepared himself to be Santa Claus was he would put on whatever toboggan we had laying around, and then he would take one of our small tank tops and hang them over his ears, and that would be the beard. And I actually found a photo of him doing that with my brother Corey and myself. And so we would practice what we wanted to ask Santa for so that we wouldn't be afraid to see Santa at Sears when mom took us to see Santa to the mall.
Okay.
And so I saw that photo and I thought that would be a great idea if we told a story about, you know, something fun, a fond memory from our childhood. And so that's mine.
That's sweet.
So
that's
I'm done.
Very
and
sweet.
I have that photo, and if I send it to Katie, I'm guessing that she will put it up on our Instagram page.
That's cute.
Because I don't have a freaking clue how to do that. So
I love that story.
Anyway,
and so
would
you guys always be ready for Santa? So then when you actually saw Santa, you weren't
scared.
Stone
cold busted, never got anything I didn't want. It was always perfect.
That's a great system.
It's almost like Gran had a direct line to, and I'm doing air quotes,
to Santa.
Which was mom and dad. So worked great every time.
I love it.
I think they probably came up with that instead of us, now that I think about it.
Well,
so
they,
that they would
to,
know what to get us.
They would overhear, and then that's sweet.
Conveniently.
Hey, your parents are so smart.
Yeah, they were
that
pretty
was
cool.
good for them.
Anyway,
that's
so
awesome.
That was my Christmas-related story.
I love it. So, I want you to go home, and I want you to take one of your undershirts or tank tops or whatever and put it on your ears. Mm-hmm. And I want you to put the dogs in your lap and take a picture like they're telling you, quote Santa, what they want so we can put it on social media.
I'll have to borrow a wife beater from your husband because I don't have one. So I'm sorry.
That is funny.
You walked right into that.
I just lobbed that right up. But I want that photo. I want that photo
done.
Of you and the dogs.
It's a done thing.
For social media.
It's happening.
All right, Katie, what's your story?
Well, I grew up, how do you say, poor?
Poor.
Yeah.
Is the word.
Real poor. So the best I can remember it, now Christmas was always great. Like I wasn't poor enough to where I woke up on Christmas and wondered where Santa was. But I can remember in my lifetime, the best two presents I can ever remember getting were bicycles. In my life, I have been given two bicycles. One was like training wheels to take off training wheels to learn how to ride bike. I don't remember when I got that bike. Second bike was, I was probably 8 or 9. I wanted a new bike because this bike was too small now, and it was like a baby bike, and that's what we did. We rode bikes everywhere. I guess I'm the last generation that really rode bikes everywhere.
Same thing with me. We rode bikes everywhere when I was a kid, so I understand what you're saying.
And I didn't have anywhere to go, really, but me and my brother would just take off and ride, so I was begging for this bike. Wake up Christmas morning, got this bike. It was on, like, the front porch. You know, Santa couldn't bring it inside, that kind of thing. The bike was too big. And they were like, well, I bet you'll grow into it. So I'd always have to get on a cinder block in the yard to get up on the bike to ride the bike. And spoiler alert, I never grew into this bike. Never grew an inch since the day I got that bike.
Yeah, I didn't want to skip to the end, but I thought that might be where she was going with that. She's not the tallest person in the room.
I had that bike in, like, well, I guess until I graduated high school. Never grew into it. Ended up, my brother, of course, outgrew me, and I swapped bikes with him, and I would ride his bike and he would ride mine because his bike was smaller.
And he didn't care that your bike was pink?
No, it was blue. But it was a girl's bike. Aren't the bars different?
Yeah, the bars. Yeah.
But
the,
it was, no, it was blue.
All right.
So it didn't matter.
As long as it was good with your brother, I guess that's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
And good for him being a cool brother.
That's a sweet brother.
Taking one for the team, letting you ride the smaller bike.
Yeah, because we weren't getting more bikes. Yeah. that was supposed to be my bike for life.
Your parents were like, okay, this bike is going to last her.
Yeah. Yeah. Never
literally forever.
Don't wear out the tread on those tires because we're not buying any more tires for that. Okay.
That's great. Love that story. So,
All right, Kelly.
Okay, so when I was a child, we used to all go on Christmas Eve. We would have a big dinner at Nanny's house. Nanny is such a Southern
My maternal grandmother was, I had a nanny.
And it's not a woman who, like, takes care of you that isn't a family member. It's not that kind of nanny.
No, it's...
It was a woman who took care of you who was a family member.
If
she was your grandmother.
If you would like to know her name... Her name was Aussie May. That was my nanny's name.
I think either one of those would have been fine with me. I mean, Aussie May or nanny.
Aussie May. And she, my granddad, Jack, that was his mother.
Okay.
So she was my great...
Great-grandmother.
Grandmother.
Okay.
And she was this little, tiny little old lady. I didn't know she was tiny at the time because I was little, you know. But we would go to her house, and she had this old house, and it had one of those porches that went, it was a big porch on the front, and it went all the way down the side of the house. And, you know, it was a great house. Yeah. I love that house. But we would all go there on Christmas Eve, and we would have this big Christmas Eve dinner, and there would be all the cousins, all the kids there, and we would play outside. I mean, it didn't matter how cold it was.
Sure, yeah.
You know, we played outside, and every evening on Christmas Eve, we would always look up, and we would convince ourselves, you know, you'd see a star, or you'd say something, oh, there's Santa, there's Santa. Yeah. You know, so we would sit on the front, in the front yard of this big house, all these little heads looking up, trying to see. And if we ever did see a star, we would see that Santa. So I miss doing that because it was a big family event. There were a lot of kids around my age, and we would do that. And I looked forward to it. I mean, that was my night. And we would stay there till late. And then I would go home, you know, and go to bed. And it's Christmas Eve. And then next day is Christmas Day. Aww. So that was fantastic. And Nanny is long gone now. She has been dead for many years. But I will forever treasure those Christmas Eve nights. I want to be that one day. I want to be Nanny.
Yeah.
Like, I want to have my great-grandkids and have several of them.
Do you hear that, daughter?
Yeah, Katie's not going to have any kids. My daughter's name is Katie, so not to confuse our listeners.
Right, right.
My daughter's name is Katie. So I'm expecting my son, Nate, to be the one that has the children. And so then his children can have children, and then hopefully I'll be around still, and I can be Nanny, and we can do this big Christmas Eve thing.
That sounds good.
And Katie can come too. Katie Turner can come too, and she can bring her cats or her dog or whatever she has. I strive to be Nanny one day.
I thought that might be a fun little segment. I'm glad we did that. Mm-hmm, that was, you know, now we all know each other a little bit better, and our audience listeners know us.
Yes.
A little better.
They do.
Yeah, yes.
So for this week, we don't have just one story that we're going to talk about, just one case. We decided to put together an episode of stories that we have researched of people from Alabama who are missing, or maybe their death is unsolved. Mm-hmm. So we have some individuals here. And the reason we decided to do this is we had so many people that we thought deserved to be mentioned on the podcast because they fell victim to some sort of tragedy, but we didn't have enough information on each of these individuals in order to have a complete episode. So we wanted to take this opportunity to bring some information and put it out there, and maybe, just maybe, somebody might have some information or somebody might know something that they didn't even know that they knew. So that's the point of this episode around the holidays. It's, you know, everyone deserves to have their story told.
Everyone has family on their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some families that like you said,
needs some,
stories
they
that
need
we've
justice.
Researched.
They need some closure. And if we can.
Closure, if nothing else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we want to be able to bring some of that out today and talk about some of these individuals who deserve, as I said, to have their story told.
Yeah, and who knows? We may be the people who jog something loose in someone's brain. Mm-hmm. And 6 months from now, one of these unsolved cases is solved.
I know that would be that would be wonderful if we could provide that for families. But let's keep these cases alive and in the light and not let them go cold. And so this is our way of doing that. So we're going to start with Katie today. Yes. She has a case for us.
And in the show notes, we're going to put some contact information if
you
know anything or have any tips or anything, you can reach out to the local sheriff's departments in each case. But I'll start with a woman named Rebecca Ferguson, her maiden name Files. So Rebecca Files Ferguson, she's mentioned as, commonly went by Becky. Becky was born on June 19th, 1956 in Oakman, Alabama, which is in Walker County. And on September 16th, 1988, at 32 years old, she went missing. She was supposed to be visiting her cousin in Birmingham, Alabama, and she was traveling from Jasper, Alabama, which is also in Walker County, same county she was born in, to Birmingham, and she never made it. Her Cadillac was found abandoned 2 days later near Curry, Alabama, abandoned on the shoulder of a road. There was no blood or evidence of any injury found at the vehicle. They did find in the vehicle jewelry in the floorboard. And then at her home, they found broken pieces of jewelry on her garage floor. And that's really the only evidence they found at her home. And they think foul play was suspected because there were two shotgun holes in the car. So, you know, that's
like spent shells.
It looks like two shotgun blasts were fired through the vehicle.
I got you.
Now, I'm assuming they found shotgun shells, but my research, it didn't say. Okay. It just said two shotgun blasts were fired through the vehicle.
Okay.
But no blood. And it didn't look like it'd been cleaned up either. Like, you know, you can tell a freshly clean vehicle, sure. Like the jewelry in the floor.
Well, that was the first question cleaner. I was going to ask. I wonder if the car that they found on the side of the road, I wonder if the car had been rendered immobile, like the battery was dead or there was a flat tire, but.
Yeah, it just said found abandoned.
Okay.
And you said there were the two holes in the car, but did they find the actual shells?
Not that it says. I guess you can tell the difference in a shotgun blast and a, because it clearly states a shotgun blast.
Yeah.
And not just a.
Yeah, that would be multiple projectiles. I mean, whereas a rifle or a pistol would be one hole.
Okay.
Standard operating procedure for the way, depending on what kind of shell it was, there's going to be dozens of individual projectiles. So, yeah, it would make a different pattern on a windshield or in a fender or whatever.
Yeah, okay. So it doesn't say they may not have found any shells. And, I mean, it might be crazy, I guess, that it could have already been shot at, but it doesn't.
Or shot at after it was left sitting there. That's what I was thinking.
What was her, did her family say this was strange? She would be gone?
Yes, it said that it was not like her to leave without telling her family of her plans. She had two young sons at the time. They said she would have never left without letting them know. She was in the process of getting a divorce at the time.
Okay.
And so.
Always suspicious. Mm-hmm.
And so that's why she's listed with her maiden name as her middle name, because she was in the process of going back to her maiden name. And like I said, the two young sons at home, she was going to visit a cousin in Birmingham. I'm assuming, you know, some time away from the house. Mm-hmm. She has brown hair, brown eyes, pierced ears. She was 32 at the time of her disappearance. She would be 65 now.
It was 98, right?
It was 88.
88, I'm sorry. Okay, I misheard you.
88. I may have misspoke, but she was born in 1956 and missing in 88. She'd be 65 now. She's 5'8". Time of her disappearance, she was about 130 pounds. Like I said, they do suspect foul play, and they do suspect that she's been murdered, but a body has never been found. Mm-hmm. And they have placed a headstone for her in Boley Springs Cemetery in Boley Springs, Alabama, which is in Fayette County. And her case is on the charlieproject.org. I found a picture of the headstone on findagrave.com. And there are Facebook pages for her. And there's been other podcast episodes. I found a podcast episode from Secrets Crime Podcast on her. And they do say if you have any tips to call the Walker County Sheriff's Office, and I'll put that phone number in the show notes, but okay, that's it on her.
Mm. All right.
And so her sons are grown up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Young children.
Because, yeah, 1988, if they were little, yeah, they'd be in their 30s now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, I hate that.
Yeah.
Maybe okay. Even early 40s. Okay. Yeah. Kelly?
My case today is about Candace Fenton. And Candace Fenton, in the 1990s, packed up and came to Alabama from New Jersey. She was ready to begin her time at Auburn University to pursue a degree in education. Her mother described her as a Southern girl at heart. She's from New Jersey, mm-hmm. but her plans were basically to stay in the South mm-hmm. and teach. So she was going to complete her studies at Auburn and then become a teacher. But on July the 18th, 1995, something terrible happened to Candace. Her mother, after not hearing from her for several days, called the police department there to ask for a welfare check. And when the police arrived at her apartment, they found her decomposing body on the floor. So when looking at the scene, trying to figure out what happened to Candace, they found that Candace was bound at the neck and her wrists were bound behind her back by a dog leash. There were no signs of forced entry. Nothing had been taken. She had no injuries beyond what the dog leash had permanently done to her neck and wrists. Her death was ruled asphyxiation, but the coroner couldn't really decide if her asthma played a role in that. This girl had asthma. But because of the decomposition of the body, he couldn't really tell. So her mother doesn't hear from her for some days and then gets this welfare check. So they don't really know exactly on what day mm-hmm. she passed away. But the investigators at Auburn, they tried to open this back up using DNA evidence in 2015. So this occurred in 1995. In 2015, they submitted for some of the DNA that they had, mm-hmm. touch DNA. And they said, quote, other forensic processes that could help solve her case. So far, I can't find anything after they submitted this. So they either did not find anything in addition mm-hmm. to what they submitted, or they're still trying to do it.
Like they're checking fingerprints in the apartment to see mm-hmm. if it popped up yeah. somewhere.
So basically, with Candace's apartment, there was no forced entry. So a lot of people are thinking that possibly she let the individual in.
Sure.
They're ruling it foul play, obviously. Mm-hmm. Candace, it was very, they kind of went back and forth trying to figure out, does she have a dog? But Candace did not have a dog.
The leash.
Yeah.
Okay, I got
she
you.
Did not have a dog. Okay. So this leash was obviously brought to the scene of the crime.
There's that other evidence they're possibly mm-hmm. looking for.
Correct. And so they don't know if she let the person in or if they walked in or maybe they knocked on the door. So this was back in the 90s. And I remember I didn't come to Auburn until 1997, but this was 1995. So not much of a difference. And if you had a dog on campus, it was a service dog pretty much. I mean, if you lived
at the time,
if you lived in a home off campus that had a fenced area, you had a dog. Because mm-hmm. we had a dog.
Yeah.
But I did not bring the dog onto campus. Now, she had right. apartments there. She was staying at...
Well, I know most apartments in Auburn now have, like, a dog area.
Yeah, it's a little... And that was one of the reasons that I brought that up, is because it's a little bit different now than it was in mm-hmm. 1995. It was not a normal occurrence to see dogs in apartments. Mm-hmm. The friends of mine that I had who had apartments.
It wasn't a thing
on
yet.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't a thing.
They
now
didn't
it's a thing.
They typically have a dog in their apartment. Right. Mm-hmm. And certainly didn't have it with them on campus. But so they were trying to figure it out, and they discovered that Candace did not have a dog. Now, a little bit about her. As a child, she was a Girl Scout. She played softball and soccer. She sang in the choir. She acted in plays. She was on the swim team. She was in the color guard for 3 years in high school. She was an officer in the Students Against Drunk Driving. Do you guys remember that in high school?
I do.
God, the mm-hmm. Students Against
sad.
Drunk Driving.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. After her father started treatment for cancer, she earned the nickname Little Miss Sunshine by singing for other patients to cheer them up.
Oh.
I know.
She wasn't sexually assaulted, right?
No. There was no sign of rape. Nothing was taken. No sign of forced entry. So what they're thinking is that it got interrupted, that someone was beginning to perpetrate a crime, and it got interrupted. Now, the police did ask her friend some very interesting questions. They asked her friend, I want to get this right. Let me get pulling back to my article, and I'll give you these links, Katie, for the show notes. They asked, the first thing they asked her friend was, how did they think that she died?
They asked.
How did her friend think that she died? Her friend Stephanie Perry. The police asked her about any type of sexual practices that she may have had. And they asked her how she thought that she got killed.
So they're fishing for some explanation for this strange
and walk in
that they have found.
Yeah, and she's partially clothed, but not like she just has on. She's dressed enough that it makes it very confusing. Uh-huh. There's no rape. There's no forced entry. Nothing is stolen. But this girl is
just dead,
and bound,
and tied up hands behind her back, and around her neck in a leash. And so I think they were just looking at all possible options. They did submit some stuff to the FBI and let them look into it for some sort of analysis, and they have not released what the FBI sent back. So they're obviously holding some things. They don't want to present those. Mm-hmm. The majority of the investigators and suspect foul play and think it was interrupted.
Yeah, I mean... It seems like it would be hard for her to find herself in this.
She couldn't have gotten herself into this. Right. She did not put herself.
Some crazy.
But I think they were also entertaining the fact that was it accidental? Was there some sort of
something
thing that she might have been into that was accidental? And then they just ran. But I would think.
Like got freaked out. And
I would think if that were the case, then she would have not been as clothed as she was. I don't know for sure. But I'm thinking in everything that I've looked at, it was a homicide. Mm-hmm. And I think it was interrupted. I think someone came in with the intentions of either raping or killing or both. And they got interrupted and had to leave.
The neighbors
abruptly.
Pull into the driveway or
something
a door
happened.
Slams, the phone rings. Mm-hmm. Well, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It makes somebody panic.
That's what
and
I
run.
Think. And, and then they ran. Right. And we have this beautiful young woman who was such a wonderful person whose life is cut short at 19 years old. And they are trying still to solve this case, especially with our new technology, but it doesn't seem to be going anywhere at this time. So my hope is that they can use some more of this new technology, submit that evidence and get some touch DNA or get something. Yeah. But the thing is, you can have all the DNA. If that person is not in the system that they're running,
then you can't match it.
Right.
You got to find them first.
Exactly. Yeah. So with all of this DNA stuff, the more people that submit for those, what is it called? The 23andMe?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things. Yeah, you submit for all these with more people that are doing that. Going into a database.
I was
going
to say, wasn't there some hullabaloo a few years ago where we all figured out that all of that stuff is public record, so that if you do that 23andMe thing and then it turns out that you were involved in a murder 20 years ago, whoops, you just...
Well, and they've been able to solve some major crimes that way. They've also been able to solve major crimes that way because relatives of the individuals who committed these crimes submitted DNA, and I think it's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No complaints here.
Yeah.
But
I think it's fantastic. But yeah, the more people we have that submit for these DNA testing, for these ancestry testings, they could find a match. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a cold case because I feel like they're still trying. I mean, even in 2015, they were still trying to submit that evidence, and I commend them for that. I just don't know if there's been anything to find just yet. And, you know, the way DNA tests work, it's more than just, run the DNA test, you know, and let's just see. There's a lot that goes into it. And then sometimes you only have enough DNA to run a test once or twice. There's not enough sample to continue testing. So I'm not really sure.
About that a lot. Like we've got to save this sample.
You got to save it. When you test it, you use it up.
Yes. And the only DNA that they mentioned was touch DNA in this case. So there was nothing at the scene. You know, I didn't get a sense that's why they're saying there was no rape.
A very forensic, clean crime scene. Mm-hmm. Almost as if it was done on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thus your suspicion.
Yeah.
Right.
So, in my personal opinion, I think they were going to perpetrate much more, and they just got interrupted.
Could be.
So, if you have any information on the murder, I'm calling it a murder, of Candace Fenton, you can call the Auburn Police Department and let them know your information that you have. If you happen to be on campus there at the college in 1995, you can let someone know. Another thing I wanted to bring up about why there was no forced entry. When I was in school, you know, we didn't have, in 1997 is when I started college, and we did not have, if you had a cell phone, I mean, it was rare, and your mother said, do not turn this on unless you have to, because it was so expensive.
Sounds right.
To have them.
Yeah.
So you didn't have a cell phone. You didn't have social media. You might get an email about something. But the most of the time, you would have a knock on the door if you had different clubs from the school that were trying to either gather data, or maybe they were fundraising or whatever they were doing. I remember our door getting knocked on many times. Hey, I'm from the whatever club, and we're doing this, you know.
It was still literally door-to-door salesman type.
Yes, or would you like to be a part of, you know, this, whatever. But, you know, like I said, you might get an email, but it was still pretty common to have individuals just knock on your door and say, hi.
You wouldn't have thought twice. Like you might today.
And you would open the door.
If somebody knocks on my door at 9 o'clock at night,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to turn off all the lights and run into the bedroom and hide.
Well, I mean, at 9 o'clock at night, they wouldn't be doing that. But during, I mean,
well, but
during,
in, but
you
in
get
college,
a summer day.
In the,
you get a summer day and it's daylight longer. So maybe 8:30. I mean, you know, something like that. It's still daylight here.
And you wouldn't think anything. I remember those days. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was in college from 88 to 93. So I know what you mean, what you're saying. Knox, that was how you.
I'm thinking that she let this perpetrator in.
Yeah.
And then they planned on more things happening and they got interrupted. Mm-hmm. But that is my opinion.
I mean,
only.
It was a different world, though. I mean, yeah.
It really
a knock
was.
On the door. Like, no one ever knocks on our door now, except, like, the other night we got a knock at the door, and I was like, Shane, get that. I don't know who that could be. And it was Joy Allen and the paramedical group doing their scavenger hunt.
Oh!
That's what?
I saw that on Facebook. It looked so fun.
Oh,
so
shout out
to Perry Medical.
Shout out to Joy Perry. Well, Joy is a regular listener.
Joy Allen.
I'm sorry, Joy Allen.
We love Joy Perry, too. Is.
Yeah,
there
cool,
is a Joy
both.
Perry. We love her, too.
Well, I said her name last week, and that got me confused. But, so that's not uncommon. Or it wasn't uncommon. It is now.
Right. So college life was a little bit different. I mean, now you get connected through social media and things like that for events that are going on at campus, on campus. But back then, you know, there was still very much, you know, door-to-door and email type things. So That's what I think. But yeah, if you have any information about Candace Fenton, please call the Auburn Police Department and let them know.
And we will have that number in the notes.
Yes,
we will.
All right, Scott, what about you?
Well, you guys are going to be disappointed in the amount of research that I've done, I think, compared to what the two of you have done, because there's not really a lot to tell about Kelly Henderson Howard, who disappeared on June the 2nd, 2009. She was a white woman, 5'3", 145 pounds, blue eyes, blonde hair. She was last seen leaving the dentist office where she worked in Riverside, Alabama. She was a dental hygienist, and she spoke to her mother on the phone before she left right around noon. I'm assuming that she was going to lunch. If you guys want to jump in, there's really not that. There's a Facebook page that no one has updated in years, apparently, because I tried to call a phone number at the bottom of it today. It says at the bottom that a certain gentleman was organizing an ongoing search team to try and find her. If you'd like to become a part of it, call this number. And there are two numbers listed. I called both of them, and neither one of them worked anymore.
But so she was leaving lunch at
She was leaving around noon from the dentist office where she worked in Riverside, and that's it. I mean, I can't find any information that her car has ever been found, or that I don't even know if she had a car. Do you guys know anything that I don't know? Because there was scant information about this particular disappearance, to the point which I called the sheriff's department, and that would be in St. Clair County. And those numbers are listed on that Facebook page. And I called both of them, and someone answered and said Central Dispatch. And I told them that I was a newspaper editor and I was researching a podcast. And she said, let me find out who the officer is. I will have him call you back. And within 30 minutes, Police Chief Heath in Riverside called me back. And I asked him basically the same things I just told you guys that I didn't know the answer to. And he said, there has been no new information in years. The latest update that you see on the Facebook page is the latest information. And that's all that we have. So she's been gone for 16 years.
And in broad daylight, like she's leaving for lunch. Right?
Yeah. And that's what confuses me about it. I said 16 years is actually 12 years, coming up on 13. But I don't really know much more about Kelly Henderson Howard from her disappearance on June the 2nd, 2009. Sorry. Just
missing in broad daylight.
Missing in broad daylight. No real information about it.
Were there any suspects or persons of interest?
Well, let me tell you one thing that someone said to me. I made a couple of phone calls today, and someone said to me on the phone today, and I'm not going to tell you who said this, but I asked the same questions to this person, and he said the dentist died of a heart attack last year. Apropos of nothing, I did not ask that question, but maybe the implication was that there was something going on in the office. I don't know. I don't want to start a rumor, but just I didn't even ask that, and he said the dentist died of a heart attack last year.
So I wonder if he was a person of interest.
I don't know.
Maybe just the last person,
or maybe just the last person to see her before she walked out the door.
Yeah.
And then disappeared. I don't know. I feel like I should have done a little bit more about this, but I swear I tried and I just could not find a lot of information. And on the Facebook page, I didn't see anything that I felt like would be something I could add that would be beneficial. So I don't know. Are you guys going to go find something tomorrow and make me feel bad for?
No. Mm-mm. This. I mean, there's not a whole lot of information, and I have been to that Facebook page that you're talking about, and it's a wonderful thing because they're trying to find their loved one, but there hasn't been anything new, and it's kind of there's a fear of it going cold because
and if there's no information, there's no information, and I couldn't find anything about what kind of car she left in, or even if she left in a car, or if someone picked her up. I mean, she talked to her mom on the phone; everything was fine, and then.
And then gone. Just gone.
Yeah, ugh. Just gone. So.
Oh, that's terrible and terrifying all at the same time. It's
terrifying to me more than it's terrible because, I mean, that could happen to any of us at any moment.
Yeah, that's, you're absolutely right.
You never really know. So.
No.
Anyway, I hope that was acceptable. You guys can cut that whole entire thing if you have to, but I just couldn't find a lot about it.
Well, thank you, Scott. And sometimes there's just not a lot. And if we find anything else or we discover anything else, we will definitely talk about it and we will post it on our social media and make sure that people see that. Because, like I said, everybody's story is important and we want to make sure that
that it's told. And so if we do discover anything else about this case.
And it's on our radar now. So, you know, we will keep it on our list of things that we have our ear to the rail on. And if something comes up, we will let everybody know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Katie, what you got next?
Yep, I've got one more here. This one is an 11-year-old girl named Heaven Lachey Ross. She went by Shay. She was born June 11th, 1992, and she went missing on August 19th, 2003. She was starting sixth grade at Collins Riverside Middle School in Northport. I guess the school's in Northport. She lived in Northport, which is near Tuscaloosa, for those who aren't around here. And it was the first few days of school, and she lived in Willow Brook Trailer Park in Northport, and there's a bus stop right down the street. So they would walk, her and her older sister would walk from their trailer park to the bus stop to catch the bus to go to school in the morning. Simple. And it's August in Alabama, so walking down the street is not a problem weather-wise, usually. And so they've headed out. Her sister's headed down the street. She's about a minute or two coming out of the house past her sister, or behind her sister. So her sister's getting to the bus stop first and she's following her. And there is a thunderstorm coming up and her stepdad hears some heavy thunder and he thinks, it's about to rain and storm and I don't want them standing out at the bus stop in the rain. I'm just going to go grab them and run them to school. So he gets in his car and heads down to the bus stop to get the girls, and her older sister, Alex, is there, but Shay is not. And so, of course, her stepdad calls her mom and or goes and finds her mom, I guess it's pre-cell phone, and they call the police. And the police originally say that, you know, they don't treat it like a missing person, or they don't treat it like a crime at the time because there's no evidence of a crime. They treat it just like a missing person, kind of like a she could have run off, they think. She's probably ditched school, and she'll show up when school's over.
Oh, so was this a normal occurrence by her?
No.
Did she?
No.
Oh.
She and
so I don't, why would they, is that, that's what the police are thinking?
Yes.
Why would they think? But I mean, I guess they don't know the child. I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, there's no, they say that since there's no evidence of a crime, they're not going to treat it as a crime yet. And she, you know, there's three separate neighbors who saw her walking to the bus stop. Mm-hmm. So three separate people saw her leave her house and head to the bus stop. So, because my first thought is stepdad.
Yeah, me too when you said that.
And, but there's three separate neighbors that say they saw her walking to the bus stop and like either out their window or they were on the front porch or like that she passed them going to the bus stop. And so an Amber Alert is not issued immediately. And there's a couple of officers that show up and a news reporter, a local news reporter, show up at the trailer park, you know, when they hear that a child is missing. But at 4 o'clock, when she still hasn't shown up at home, things escalate pretty quickly. And a few officers and one reporter turn into FBI agents and national media.
Ah. Quickly.
Yes. The next morning, a command center opens, and it operates a headquarters there at the trailer park for the next 10 weeks. It's a headquarters for local, state, and federal law enforcement officers, as well as volunteers, family members, media, anything like that. It's ground zero.
I would say that's a pretty good response. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get it. We can't do anything until she doesn't show up after school. But if she doesn't show up after school, then we're going to hit the panic button. And it sounds like they did.
Yeah. There's a lot of tips that come in. Mm-hmm. But those tips end up going crazy. Like, there's a man who's like, hey, if you'll send me some stuff, I can track her aura and see if we can find her that way. It gets pretty crazy.
I think when you open up a tip line, that's probably standard that people,
yeah,
you get all kinds of calls. And maybe deep down in his heart of hearts, he was trying to help. But the first thing he asked for was money, right?
Well,
to track her aura.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So he's not just offering out of the goodness of his heart. So
no,
it's
I don't
like,
think so.
Come on.
And now, like I said, she is 11 at the time of her disappearance. She was wearing a pink Bratz t-shirt with matching capri pant.
I remember the Bratz. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Spelled with a Z.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She's a year older than me, so Yeah, I remember having the Bratz doll. I had the Bratz head that you did her hair and the big mm-hmm. eyes. And yes, mm-hmm. She had fiery red hair and hazel eyes. They described her as she was kind of had a personality that was all over the place. She'd play in the mud or in the nearby creek, but she also like decorated her room in butterfly stickers. And, you know, like I said, was wearing pink Bratz attire to school. She played the trombone. And she loved playing the trombone, they said. But
she was 11.
11.
So a trombone is as big as...
Probably as big as her,
As big as
she
her.
Was, she was small. Yes, they said she was like 4'6", 4'8", I think, and like 100 pounds, maybe probably less. But 3 years and 3 months to the day of her disappearance, she was found under an abandoned house in a secluded area off of Crescent Ridge Road in Holt, Alabama. And the area was a known spot where people used drugs and did other illegal activity. It was abandoned, but it was pretty well known that that kind of activity went on around there. Some man was out looking for cans and found her. Investigators, when they went out to see the body, they knew immediately that it was her because of she still had the pink Bratz shirt on. Mm-hmm. And they had actually an exact pink Bratz shirt hung up at like the sheriff's department or wherever, mm-hmm. like letting people know, hey, look,
so they would know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, so like, I'm sure it was like a
they saw it every day.
Mm-hmm. They saw that shirt, they had it hung up. And police assume that someone who frequented the area either saw what happened or heard something or knows what's happened, but they haven't got anywhere in that investigation because. You know, an area that stuff like that happens in, you know, people talk. People, I mean, they assume more people saw that body before this man, but it just wasn't the right type of people to call
it
in.
And this is, what, 2004 or 5?
She went missing in 2003, so she was found in 2006.
Okay.
So you would think that based on how they're describing the house is that there's a lot of illegal activity going on, and mm-hmm. so no one's gonna say anything because of the illegal activity that they're involved in. I would just encourage anybody, if you're listening and you know something about this, put that aside and tell them so that they can find out who did this to this little girl. And you know what? Whoever did this, I hope they struggle every single day.
Yeah, me too. If they're still alive.
Mm-hmm. I hope that you are not sleeping. I hope that you are just a wreck.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you know what? Turn yourself in. Just go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Just turn yourself in.
Do the world a favor.
And do the world a favor. And tell them what you've done so you can pay for your crime.
I mean, you know, just snatched her up on her way to the bus. And
this is an 11-year-old.
And her sister, thank God, you know, was a few steps ahead.
But her sister didn't see anything, didn't know anything.
Didn't see anything. I mean, split second. I mean, they said they left the house about 2-3 minutes apart from each other. They talked, I saw some interviews like her mom. She continuously says, you know, she just wishes they would have treated it more seriously sooner because.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
Yeah, it was those 8 hours mm-hmm. between
critical time.
7:30 in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well,
that's
when
it all happened.
The school is saying she's not there.
Right.
And the parents
and she's
are saying,
11.
Yeah,
she went to school.
Yeah,
she's 11 years old.
Yeah.
Do it right then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, was there even any such thing? You said Amber Alert a minute ago, Katie. Was Amber Alert, was that a thing back then? When did that happen? I remember, we all know it exists now, but I don't remember mm-hmm. when that was brand new.
Let's see.
But obviously.
Amber Alert started in 1996.
Oh, wow. Okay. Sooner than I would have guessed.
I knew that all the article I read had mentioned specifically that
I was
they
certain
didn't.
That it did, or you wouldn't have said it, but I just.
So is that the consensus that they drug their feet too long?
That's what the mother, you know, and I think law enforcement, of course, is going to say what, you know, it wasn't protocol then to do anything different. But I think from what I've read, the protocol has changed now.
As it should have.
Yeah. But at the time, that was not protocol to just assume that they had been, that foul play had happened. But her mother for sure is vocal mm-hmm. about that, you know, maybe if that something would have happened sooner that they would have found her. But, mm-hmm. but you know, we don't know. If
right.
anything happened.
I mean, yeah, it's impossible to measure that
sure,
and to know. But
yeah, she.
I'm glad that's changed and that now it is immediately taken seriously.
Yeah.
When you are talking about a child,
yeah.
and or just really anyone who their family is saying this is not.
All of a sudden, something crazy happened. Yes, hey, this is they were not, supposed to be here 5 minutes ago, and they're not here. And
this is out of character. This is not like this person. Something's wrong. And so what? So what if you put out an all alert and you find them? Good.
Yeah. Yeah, instead of doing nothing, you find them, something.
Do, you know, skip and school. Okay, well, you still found them. And you know, I understand that law enforcement, they want to have a protocol and most of the missing people, quote, missing people are found because they're just not where they're supposed to be at the right time. But it, we're talking about an 11-year-old child who set out to get on the school bus. We have no reason to think that she wouldn't get on the school bus and go to school.
Right.
Not so.
Yeah.
Ugh. And ugh.
I'm with you.
Whoever did this.
I'm with you.
Yeah. I mean, she wasn't having trouble at school. She wasn't being bullied, anything. Like, she wrote in a diary and they found her diary. And, you know, it talked about liking the boy down the street or, you know, this, that, and other. It had nothing
like an 11-year-old girl.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And she had numbered all the remaining pages. She hadn't wrote in many pages of the diary, it said, but she had numbered all the remaining pages. So, like, she was planning to keep writing.
So, yeah, to not a runaway situation.
Not a runaway.
Oh, my gosh. Turn yourself in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the family can get closure.
So they know.
And you can go to jail. Fair and everybody enough. There can know what you did.
Yeah.
While you're in jail. All right. Well, if you have any information about any of these crimes, please, please let somebody know.
Yeah.
And email us at truecrimeoneasystreet@gmail.com.
Yes.
truecrimeoneasystreet, all one word, all lowercase. @gmail.com.
No hyphens, no, no underline, no, underscores, nothing like that.
Send us an idea for a case. We are hurtling towards season two.
I would say falling.
Falling towards season two.
Whatever.
We have one more episode left in this season.
That is crazy. Mm.
And our season two will start in January. Yeah. So we got some fun things planned for January.
She's pointing at me. I think she means it.
Mm-hmm. We've got some big things planned for the season two, so we're very excited. And all this merch we keep talking about.
Is the merch coming?
The merch is coming in 2022.
I love it.
And we will put, like I said, all this information in show notes for the Walker County Sheriff's Office, the Auburn Sheriff's Department,
St. Clair County. St. Clair County Sheriff's Office.
And Tuscaloosa.
Thank you all for listening.
Good night, everybody.